Welcome to Chair Chat, an online web series hosted by me, Jamie Harrison, the chairman of the South Carolina Democratic Party. Our goal in this series is to begin to look at political leaders, activists, and people involved in politics in a three-dimensional manner. We will move past the political caricatures to get to know the individual. So now, let's chat. There are tons of campaign consultants, but very few are remembered. Our next guest redefined the role. If you saw the documentary on Bill Clinton's election of 92, The War Room, then you saw him in action. He's known as a quiet man. No, that's for another guest. He's known as an outspoken man, a loyal friend, and a fearless opponent. So now, let's get a glimpse of the mind of James Carville. James, welcome to Chair Chats.
Oh, it's good, man. It's real good. You know what? In case anybody's wondering, the lemonade is real and it's pretty doggone good. I just had me a little sip.
Well, listen, I appreciate that because I know you are a man who knows his lemonade. So so thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Well, it's good. It's good to be here in old South Kakalaki. You know?
Well, listen, everyone knows you are from the great state of Louisiana. A place known for its party, its food, and its politics.
Oh, yeah.
So I promise we won't, you know, being here in South Carolina, we won't get into the debate about Charleston versus New Orleans. but let's talk a little bit about food.
Okay.
Being from Louisiana, what's your favorite dish from your home state?
Probably gumbo and gumbo. All. Yeah. I mean, I like the way the flavors merge and everything. Yeah. I like seafood gumbo. You know, I'm doing chicken gumbo and you name it.
Yeah.
And I like a little oyster liquor in my stock, you know.
Is there a restaurant you love to go to when you're in New Orleans?
You know, there are so many, because it kind of depends on the mood I'm in, and it depends on who I'm with. You know, if I go with my wife, I might want to go with a different place. I want to go with my friends. I might want to go to another place. It's where the, as you know, I said in South Carolina, it's where the spirit moves me.
I hear you.
Well, we know you love food. You're a connoisseur of food. We know you're a connoisseur of politics, but you also love sports.
Oh God, do I?
And I heard that you have a radio show.
Yeah, I had a radio show with Luke Rusted on 60/20 Sports. Yes, boy, I love doing that show.
What's been the best sporting event you've ever seen or ever attended?
Probably the LSU Florida game in 2007 when we, as a year, we won the national championship and we converted, I think, like 5 fourth downs.
Yeah.
And we were in a kind of a tussle with Southern Cal, and the announcer came on and said that Stanford had upset Southern Cal, and it was kind of those magical night games in Tiger Stadium. You know, the real Death Valley.
Yeah. So is football your favorite sport?
No, it's a ball and it's in season. I like it. I like basketball. I got season tickets to the Pelicans games. I like baseball. I follow the Washington Nationals. So. Yeah. But I guess LSU football has always been what I sort of grew up with, so it's a real passion of mine. And we play the Gamecocks in Baton Rouge this year, I think.
Oh, yeah. There is nothing like SEC football. I tell you, it is it is definitely a huge culture shift, particularly for those folks who've never been down south to see a college football game.
Right, and you know, we didn't have a tradition of having professional teams.
Yeah.
And I always thought that, you know, fall is our time of the year. When summer's over, that's a good, you know, in other parts of the country, you live up north, spring is a big thing to you because the merciless winter's over. Well, spring to us just means summer's coming.
Yeah, exactly right.
Fall means summer's over, so we got excited about it.
You are known in the political circles as the Raging Cajun. What are you currently raging about?
I don't know. I think I'm the Aging Cajun. I think I've crossed that magical line, if you will. You know, I guess, and it's always been this way, and it's never going to change, but it's the way the press treats the Clintons compared to the way they treat everybody else. So let's just take and go right to the thing. Let's just take this current email controversy.
Yeah.
Jeb Bush had the same private server. Colin Powell had the same private server. The Bush White House had the same private server. Don't care. It's the Clintons. Well, shut up. And I've just been listening to this kind of stupidity for so long, and you got to come out, because I've been dealing with this stuff since You know, remember the Whitewater investigation? Yeah. Most people probably don't. They spent $85 million. They spent four times more investigating a $47,000 land deal in Arkansas than spent investigating TWA 800, which killed 300 people. So, you know, and I see the where the country is going, and there's an epic struggle in this campaign. And when you listen to Republicans, you listen to Donald Trump, they talk about, we want to go back. We want the America that we had. And when you listen to Hillary Clinton, she's talking about the America we can be. I think this is clear contrast coming up in the campaign in a fundamental view of the world in terms of the fundamental issues. All they want to do when they get in office is say, we're going to get rid of Obama's climate deal. We're going to let the coal plants pollute all they want. We're going to get rid of Obamacare. We're going to throw, I don't know how many million people out of health insurance and cause health care costs to rise. We're going to get rid of the Iran deal and, you know, probably start a war with Iran because we started a war with Iraq and everybody knows how wonderful that worked out. So why wouldn't you want to start another one?
And probably not pay for it.
Right, probably not. But, yeah, no, why should we pay for it when some kid born in 2032 can pay for it, you know? And we're going to go back to that wonderful Cuba policy we had in 1962 that's worked brilliantly. So it really is I think this thing is teed up in a way that gives voters a real choice. Do we want to embrace the future in the way what America can be, or do we want to try to go back to what America used to be? And I think that's the real choice. And when they get in all of this, did you email server and the, it's you know, it's insane. But it's politics. It's the way it's done. I understand that. And it irritates them when I come home and call them out, but we just got to do it sometimes.
You know, in the United States, and I would say particularly in the South, in Democratic politics, we have this conundrum that we're dealing with in terms of rural and low-income voters who vote against their own or their best economic interests. You know, why do people do that?
Well, I mean, look, there's been 1,000 studies about this.
Yeah.
One of the most reliably Democratic groups are Jews who tend to vote Democratic. People, why don't they vote interest? You know, the people that vote against their interests more than any other people? Stock market investors. I don't understand. I cannot understand why anybody that has a penny in the stock market would be a Republican. If you look at the returns you have under Democratic administration, but so a lot of politics to people is tribal, it's cultural, and some of it can't be explained. I think political scientists have looked at this for a long, long time. And there are a lot of people understand it in this epic battle that we see it now, and I think we've seen it very clearly. There are a lot of people who were comfortable in America that was.
Yeah.
It would work to their advantage, and there's a lot of people that are scared of the future. There are a lot of people that think the future is not. When I was telling these young people, I was in Memphis, and when I went to law school, they had three women in my law school class and one African American. Everybody could get a job because, you didn't have to compete.
Yeah.
And I mean, and so the world changes. And you know, when I was growing up, when I was a young fella, our two biggest adversaries, we just beat the snot out of in World War II. We didn't have to compete with the Germans or the Japanese. They were defeated nations. Well, that's not the way the world is. And I think that there are a lot of people in the South that romanticize or think what we had is so much better than what we can have. And you're not going to. And you can talk to people and be nice to them, be polite. You know, there's no, you know, you don't have to call them names. But at some point, you have to, in your mind, embrace the country that can be. And I think that's the trick here.
How do, you know, I represent all of the southern states on the DNC Executive Committee.
Right.
And one of the big things that we've been talking about, and we saw it so clearly in the 2014 election, we saw it in Louisiana with Mary Landrieu, we saw it in Georgia with Jason Carter, Michelle Nunn, we saw it here even in South Carolina with Vincent Shaheen. But the share of the white vote that went for Democrats in the South just dropped precipitously.
You know, I understand that, and I live with it in Louisiana. Yeah. And we don't have a Democratic statewide elected official in Louisiana, and you probably don't.
Same South Carolina.
The country is really undergoing some fundamental changes. And at any time right before, if you look at the arc of history, as the change is getting ready to take place, the reaction to that change becomes very vigorous. And I think we are on the verge of some really underlying changes. Now, if you talk about the South, and presidential elections are a little bit different than off-year elections, and remember, our statewide office is off-year. In the last two presidential cycles, the Democrats have carried Virginia and Florida twice.
Yeah.
And carried North Carolina once, and probably North Carolina at some point is going to switch to being a reliable Democratic state. Well, that is, what, 29 electoral votes in Florida, and Virginia is probably, what, 15 mm-hmm. or so. So you got a lot of South Carolinas and Louisiana and Mississippis that you can lose that don't make up for those. But it is true, and I think that what the Democrats need to do is talk about, like I'm talking now, is sort of contrast what we can be. And as long as you're appealing to people and saying you can have what you used to have, that's attractive to a large number of people, but that's just not the way the world works, and I don't think it's the way the party should work.
Well, one of the ideas is that has been floated is to say, okay, there are generations of Southern white voters that we're just not going to get back. And so maybe it is to focus on this, the millennials, the new generations of young kids who are coming up, who are open to and welcoming the gay marriage and all that.
Max Planck, the great German theoretical physicist, once said that science does not triumph because it convinces its opponents. It triumphs because its opponents eventually die. Science advances one funeral at a time. And, you know, our chances at a reliable Republican in South Carolina that's 60 years old to get into the next cycle, probably not that great. But you're right. We can. Look what Secretary Clinton is doing. One of the biggest problems young people face is to get an education when they don't get out of college, where they're strapped and mired in debt to God knows what not. She's got the most comprehensive plan to deal with that. Young people entering the workforce see that the wages are not what they should be. They see that productivity is increasing. They see corporate profits is increasing, but they don't see any increase in wages. If you talk about things like that, how you can enhance opportunity for them, how you can make the workplace a place where they can advance, where they can have the kind of future that people want, then I think you can. Another thing, in young people are not. One of the great things that happened here. And this applies to all people. We've not been able to affect our children with the prejudices that we had. Yeah. If I even mentioned to my children that someone is gay, this person is black, Daddy, why even mention that? What are you talking? And I mean, I said it's a derogatory. I just said, well, yeah, look, there's a black guy across here. But why? He's just a person. Why do you even have to say that? You know, and so. And they understand the tone that we're talking about, and they understand the kind of issues. And what I think, if I were a young person, I would hear what Donald Trump is saying. And these young people, they got kids that are Hispanic kids. They got gay. I mean, they just tend to be a much more encompassing people than the older people are. And you know, and you're going to win. To win some, you're going to lose some. Yeah. You know, we used to lose New Jersey all the time. We win that all the time. But Bush Sr. carried California. Look, this parade is left. It's marching. And some people are going to be in the back of the parade and some people be in the front of the parade. But it's moving. And there's nothing you can do but the resistance in some quarters. But I think if you're looking at the world today, looking at the United States today, people are, you know, they're kind of like, damn, you know, this climate stuff, there might be something to that. Yeah. You know, I'm going to worry about it. And you say, you know, what the way these companies are working, they just really, you know, these workers are not getting their fair share of what's going on. You know, they see the healthcare thing, they were told, oh, God, the healthcare thing is going to collapse. And they see that You know what? The world, not only the world not falling apart, there's more people that have health insurance now. Most people don't realize that the last 4 years are the best 4 years we've had since World War II in terms of the deficit dropping.
Exactly.
Most people don't realize that in terms of immigration, we have much fewer immigrants today than we did when President Obama took office. I mean, you know, but after a while, that information becomes apparent to people.
Yeah. So let's get some classic James Carville opinions. They're classic. Who has been the best politician, Democrat, Republican, past 100 years?
I guess you'd have to say Franklin Roosevelt, because I elected president 4 times.
All right,
but you couldn't. Yeah, that's an achievement. And he won a war and beat a depression. Not many people have that in terms of raw politics. I mean, I think Bill Clinton's the best. I think he's once in a multi-generation kind of politics.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Obama's pretty remarkable. You know, we've had some pretty, you know, different kind of political leaders. I think for Democrats, and I think this is one thing, I'm saying this seriously. If you are a Republican, the only guy you got is Reagan, so they have to trot him out for everything because there's nobody else they got. they can't use Eisenhower because he's, by today's standards, he's a braving Democrat, of course.
Yeah.
And, you know, young people, they got both Clintons they can look to, they got Obama, they got people that, you know, that they can look up to. And I think that's why we do tend to do better with younger people. I think our history as a party has been about advancing, and it's still about that. It's about advancing sensible climate policies. It was about advancing the rights of gay Americans. It was about advancing the right of women. It's about, you know, clearly we were the party and continue to be the party of civil rights. So I think that we're a party that's on the march, that's on in tune with the future.
Well, you know, the rumors and speculation are running rampant right now. You're hearing all kinds of things in the media. Vice President Joe Biden might get in. The other day I heard Vice President Al Gore is thinking about it. Do you see anyone else getting into this race?
Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, I once said, it was on Sunday morning TV, so I could say, I said, running for president is like having sex. No one ever did it once and forgot about it. It's got a high recidivism rate. Said, once you want to be president, you always want to be president. So, and I'll tell you something else. Like this is news, running for president is hard. It's hard. This is going to be hard race for Secretary Clinton. They all are.
Yeah.
It was hard in 92. It's hard for everybody. Everybody's trying to, you know, throw something in your way. They're throwing banana peels on the ground. They're doing anything they can to try to muck it up for you. So, I know one thing. They'd like to get back in there because I know they want to be president because they ran before.
Yeah.
And the only reason, and that's okay. That's good. We want to have a country where the president is worth something and talented people want to run for it.
Well, if Secretary Clinton wins a nomination, who would you like for her to face in the fall?
Well, me?
Yeah.
Trump?
Yeah.
I think he gives, and I don't, you know, I think any time, and I go back to what I said, and I really mean this, the sharper the contrast between the country we can be as opposed to the country we used to be, the clearer the path, I think, to victory.
Yeah. I doubt that you took a poll on this very famous saying of yours, but how did you come up with the saying, it's the economy, stupid?
You know, I think I was trying to say what the meaning of it is don't get too fancy in your thought.
Yeah.
Okay.
Democrats tend to do that.
They go, we need policy position, and we gotta have we just don't want to think and talk in those sound bites. And you know, saying, look, it's people's lives. Remember, it was the economy's stupid. Change versus more of the same, and don't forget health care.
Yeah.
Right? And so you want to, and just like you noticed in this interview that we've had, how I would keep returning to a little tutorial here by Professor Carville. If you notice how I keep returning to this future-past dichotomy,
exactly right.
All that's what you want to do, is you want to have an overreaching message, a vision for the country, or contrast in an election, and then fit things in that contrast. And I happen to think this is one of these instances where things fit nicely.
Yeah. Well, let one last question before I let you go.
See, y'all had to bring me down here instead of Podesta because everybody understands the way I talk in South Carolina. I don't have an accent here.
Well, my one last question is, how does James Carville relax? Is there something you like to do? Is there something you like to watch on television? Is there some type of activity? What is it that you really like to do to just let your hair down?
Honestly, what I run every day, and that's where I have my better thoughts, and it sounds weird,
yeah,
in a way. And I like to run on a humid day. It kind of when I relax the best, I come in and I is not a, and this happens to me very often in New Orleans, and it certainly would happen in South Carolina. I come in and I like to be totally drenched,
yeah,
and then I sit down and maybe have like a lemonade or something like that. When I get a chance to, I like to ride in the car with my kids because the only time I get a chance to talk to them, my daughter's a junior in college and a senior in high school, and you don't get to spend any time with them. Yeah. But I don't play golf. I don't have patience for that. I guess I'm like most people. I like a good fall, October, Saturday, where we got a lot of weekend, we got a lot of football games, we got, yeah, the baseball playoffs, and I like to cook,
yeah,
all right, and sit there maybe with some friends and, maybe have some gumbo or, something like that, or some oysters, fried oysters. I like to.
Oh, the oyster pool boy is a.
Yeah. Don't get me started. I could eat.
All right. Is there any favorite shows right now? There are a lot of political shows popping up here and there. You have any? You watch Scandal?
What's kind of odd is I don't really watch, other than sports, I bet you I don't spend 2 hours a year watching television.
Yeah.
Even I don't even watch that much. I'm on the road a lot. I teach. I like my class. I like my students. And I'm a very nervous guy. I can't sit in a place. People say, you gotta watch this Breaking Bad, or you watch something like that. But tell you the truth, if I see old Barney Fife on there, if I'm Sir Channel Surfer, I like to watch him.
Listen, I grew up watching Andy Griffith Show. When my aunt used to come on here on television every night at about 11:30, and so I still love watching old Barney and the rest of the
country. I have a place about an hour from New Orleans. I have a, people in South Carolina can relate to this, I got a Ford F-150 pickup truck, and I get on there and I got the Bluetooth or whatever you call it. Yeah, you can talk on the phone and drive at the same time, and I sit there and get me a cup of, strong black coffee and, talk to all my friends and catch up on the gossip, and that's kind of fun to me.
well, that's great. Well, James, I want to thank you so much for sitting down and rocking with.
Oh no, man, this is a great. I love this format. It's really kind of thing. Like I say, if anybody doubts, the lemonade is not a prop. It's real and it's pretty good.
Well, thank you, James. We really appreciate it.
Anytime.
And thank you. You are always welcome on Chair Chats. On the next Chair Chats.
Well, I also know that you and your husband wrote a book. I went online and I saw it already hit number one in a particular category on Amazon.
It did. It hit actually number one in three different categories.
Wow.
Grief and bereavement, faith, and parenting.